folks, and welcome to The Farm, a podcast dedicated to culture, parapolitics, and high weirdness in all its many forms. This is yours, Recluse, a.k.a. Steven Snyder, the longtime curator of the Visit blog and author of A Special Relationship, Trump, Epstein, and the Secret History of the Anglo-American Establishment. Okay, folks, here are some quick thoughts on events presently unfolding. It is currently October 8th. 2023, as I'm recording this. It's a Sunday. It has been an incredible couple of days in terms of geopolitical events, roughly for the last 10 days or so. I'm just going to try and give you guys a rough outline of some of the big ones that unfolded and how all of this is interacting together with the conflicts currently playing out. Of course, I'm sure the big one on everybody's mind right now is Israel. But before getting to that, I wanted to address a few of the other headlines currently making the round. So, Nebly, we got to start off here with Ukraine. It has been an incredibly rough October for Ukraine, to put it mildly. The hits really started, I think, around October 1st, actually, with Slovakia's national election. This brought to power a populist left-wing party. It was a Direction Social Democracy. I think they're called SMER or something like that. I'm probably butchering the pronunciation. My apologies. But they appear to have pulled out the election, formed a coalition government, and already they have begun discussing as to whether or not they will continue to support Ukraine in the current war. A March opinion poll found that roughly 51% of Slovakians think the West and or Ukraine are responsible for the conflict. So that's not really very encouraging there, to put it mildly. So Slovakia is also a country that shares a border with Ukraine as well. So this could also be a major issue if they decide not just to cease supporting Ukraine, but to cease allowing their country to be used to move NATO armaments and so forth through to get to the Ukrainians. And also potentially as well, Slovakia could be poised to veto any particular Ukrainian membership in NATO as well. And this is coming on top of a lot of issues that Ukraine has been confronting with several of its neighbors, most notably Poland. Again, there has been a major backlash against Ukrainian refugees. There's also been a lot of issues coming to the forefront over Ukrainian grain supplies, because it's really been hurting Poland in that regard. So this is coming on top of a real breakdown in relations with the Poles as well. So this is another factor that is just not great for Ukraine's, frankly, long-term prospects, to put it mildly. It's interesting too, there's been some theories put out that if Prigozhin was actually assassinated, the Wagner head part of it might have been driven by concerns over Poland. Apparently the Wagner fighters have been making them very nervous, so it's possible this might have been a bit of a tit for tat to de-escalate things on behalf of Russia with Poland. So who knows on that regard. But regardless, Ukraine is increasingly finding itself pretty isolated in the east there, with many of its neighbors becoming increasingly disillusioned. And that was before the whole fiasco that played out U.S. Congress this past week. For those of you living under a rock, Kevin McCarthy was outed as the House Speaker this week. And a lot of this had to do with support for Ukraine. Imagine that. So If you haven't been following the US psychodrama over the budget, a stopgap bill was signed, I think, towards the end of the first week of October, maybe something along those lines, that essentially would keep the US government funded for the next 45 days, with the deadline, I think, running out. Around mid-November. That's right. It was passed. It came in just, I think, what, September 30th, just before the actual deadline or something like that. And it basically is keeping the US government funded until the middle of November. One of the provisions for this stopgap funding was that they had to strip funds for Ukraine from the proposed budget. Then reports came out that McCarthy had done a deal on the side, effectively, to secure funding for Ukraine through another bill or something to that effect. It leaked out, and that essentially led to a full-scale revolt against McCarthy, and it has put a lot of continuous funding for Ukraine up in the air, to put it mildly. And this would be absolutely huge if the funding doesn't materialize. Again, Ukraine has already been very strapped for armaments and all this other stuff. And if the United States was to cease funding, not only would that be the end of a major cash source, but there's a good chance that the EU would essentially follow suit, since there's just, I don't think, any way that they could really rationalize continuing to back this conflict without financial support at a minimum from the United States. So the long-term viability of this conflict is being seriously challenged at this point, to put it mildly. And that brings us to the big events that began to unfold on October 6th, or excuse me, October 7th, namely the nearly unprecedented assault on southern Israel by Hamas. As I am recording this, there's an estimated, I think, 700 Israelis that have been reported dead, well over 1,000 wounded. There are reports of somewhere around the lines of roughly 100 hostages or something to that effect. So this is just huge on so many levels, and it's also coming after a lot of renewed hostility in Syria as well. There's been a lot of military movements going on over there. You had a kind of bizarre incident this week where it seems that a Turkish drone might have been attacking US supported forces. So there's already been, I think, a push to try and escalate things in this particular region of the world, even before the assault on Hamas began, or the assault by Hamas began, rather. So this was definitely a well-coordinated attack. It's probably been in the works for several months now. It almost surely was tactically backed, if not possibly conceived of, in part with the assistance of Iranians and Russians. Again, I'm not trying to be a US propagandist and saying that or anything, but for obvious reasons, it makes a lot of sense for them to support this conflict, especially Russia, as this would inevitably divert US armaments, other supplies, potentially US forces as well, to this region of the world away from Eastern Europe. So there's a huge benefit to this. There's already a lot of questions, though, as to whether or not there were ulterior motives, who knew what. It's tentatively being described as an enormous intelligence breakdown on the part of Mossad, which enabled Hamas to effectively launch a massive stealth invasion without the Israeli security forces having the slightest awareness of what was happening. And I believe this is also coming on, the 50th anniversary of the Yom Kippur War. So it was a highly significant date that was coming up as well. This has led to speculation that possibly the current Israeli government was aware of the attacks and allowed them to happen in a bid to try and mobilize forces for a ground war in the Gaza Strip. Certainly such a possibility cannot be discounted. Mossad is beyond question one of the finest intelligence services out there, so it's a bit questionable that they would have been totally unaware of this action unfolding on the one hand. On the other hand, though, as I was indicating before, it seems rather improbable that the U.S. would have signed off on something at this point in that regard, because the U.S. is quickly losing any kind of ground it has in that particular region of the world. I mean, you go back a good 10 years ago, we were firmly aligned with the Gulf states and Israel as our proxies effectively in that region of the world. And now you fast forward to 2023, the Gulf states are rapidly abandoning the United States, most notably Saudi Arabia, which for years, along with Israel, was our most reliable quote unquote ally in that particular region of the world. Saudis seem like they are pulling out of that pact. The United Arab Emirates are almost inevitably going to follow them. We still have somewhat decent relations with Qatar, but again, just need a little bit more than just that particular region for a toehold in a highly significant part of the globe like this. Another issue with this, too, is the cost of oil. Of course, this is a major lifeblood for Russia and the black market oil that it's been selling already. The Saudis have been assisting the Russians by going through production cuts to try and drive the price of oil up. A renewed conflict in Israel of this scale will almost inevitably drive the cost of oil up even further, even if there aren't any significant supply disruptions, at least in the short term. That is to say, the cost of oil going up, it's going to be devastating, most likely, to the U.S. consumer. Gas has already been going up. We've arguably exhausted a good chunk of our strategic reserves trying to keep the price of oil down. So that alone could become a major issue for the United States, which is the reason why I don't see a logical reason for them to sign off on allowing some kind of attack like this to happen, to say nothing of the fact that has been widely reported, we've really exhausted a lot of our spare armaments, sending them to Ukraine along with many of our other NATO allies. So we're already very short on weaponry that we can potentially send to the Israelis. the Biden administration seems to have initiated the pullout of Afghanistan so that we could free up forces potentially to redeploy to Eastern Europe and Taiwan. So we don't have very many troops left there. We would again have to turn around and then try to free up troops and redeploy them back there. Of course, already it's been announced that we're sending an aircraft carrier out there. So great. But again, I just, how much the United States can really get in there and directly intervene in this conflict with the position that we're already in without, frankly, abandoning Ukraine. It's really hard to see how they would manage that. Clearly, it seems like the major objective of the U.S. security forces was to shore up their position in the Far East and Taiwan and in Europe to try and counter the great powers here, Russia and China. So having a major conflict breaking out in the Middle East would certainly be detrimental to that. It puts us in a situation where effectively we might have to choose whether to continue propping up the only real ally, again, quote unquote, Israel was an ally, something a lot of people would debate, not without some legitimate reasons for that, so just saying, but regardless, this would be really the only overtly pro-U.S. regime essentially left in that region of the world. So are we going to withdraw forces that we try to free up for other parts of the world to support Israel, or are we going to possibly let it fall? If Israel falls, that is, I think, going to be not unlike, you know, the U.S. withdrawing from Vietnam. I know there were some comparisons made with Afghanistan in that regard, but it didn't have quite that significance because when we withdrew from Vietnam, that really brought to an end almost 30 years or so of U.S. intervention in mainland Asia and the Far East. We'd had troops there almost continuously for 30 or so years. And when we pulled out of Vietnam, we basically had nothing left except a toehold in South Korea. And possibly that's what we're looking at here. Maybe we have a slight toehold in Qatar, maybe Turkey, best we can manage. But yeah, it's going to be really a major reorientation for that region of the world, to put it mildly, if Israel does fall as a result of this. So there are probably some tough choices coming for the Biden regime in the coming days over this. And finally, if wasn't enough bad news for the Biden administration, they also have to confront something else which has become glaringly obvious, and that is the fact that so many NATO armaments have really just become obsolete. I've brought this up before, but it bears repeating again. Drones have absolutely revolutionized modern warfare. We just really, I think, only started to get an inclination of that with the conflict between Saudi Arabia and Yemen that the U.S. had really pushed the Saudis for. And it was a disaster because Saudi Arabia's extremely expensive U.S. supplied and trained air force was decimated by drones from Yemen, okay? And this is the same thing that we've seen play out in Ukraine with a lot of these advanced weapons, these tanks and so forth being sent out there and effectively being destroyed by drone technology. Sometimes the flying variety, also the Russians have been doing some drones in previously manned tanks that they're essentially using as decoys. And apparently, drones were a big part of Hamas's assault as well. Effectively, they used drone bombs to launch the war against Israel from Gaza, and they were able to use a lot of these drones to take out high-tech observation towers, some of Israel's really advanced tanks and things like that. And this is just absolutely a huge, huge game changer, because the ultimate cost of drones and the explosives to arm them with is very mild. I mean, you're talking maybe tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars tops, in relation to the cost of like what an F-34 or an advanced tank or something, to say nothing of the investment that it takes to train a pilot or a tank operator, right? So drones have provided a means for hostile nations to destroy very effectively a lot of these advanced NATO weapons without having to pony up a lot of money to do it. And on top of that, I mean, they're not even really putting a soldier at risk either. Most cases, you've actually got these things being operated by somebody who's well behind the lines. So this is something that we could potentially be struggling with for years to come. I mean, obviously, there's been so much discussion of late about corruption within the Ukraine government, and especially in the security services, and it's all quite valid, but we really, I don't think, have even begun to consider the implications for something like this in the United States. You know, we have our military industrial complex. We have been throwing hundreds of billions of dollars at all of these advanced weapons platforms. Again, the F-34s or the F-32, I can't remember which one, but the new version of the F-16s. It's been rumblings for years that these planes are essentially junk. And when you take in the amount of what it costs to develop them, it's kind of staggering. But even assuming that they function fairly well, we're now seeing that technologies like drones can really neutralize these highly advanced weapon systems for a fraction of the cost. How many weapons have we been investing in heavily for the last 20 years or whatever that are in the same category that effectively have been rendered obsolete from advances in technology? I mean, there's other things that we've been investing in for years now that have been useless for probably decades. I'm going back to maybe the end of the Cold War. Aircraft carriers are a great example of that. And a legitimate shooting war against Russia or China, I mean, these things are sitting ducks out there for surface-to-air missiles. I mean, they would probably be destroyed before they could even get remotely close to one of their targets. So we're probably sitting on mounds and mounds of these quote-unquote advanced weapons that we've spent billions on for years now. And a lot of this stuff could just potentially be absolutely wiped out by weapons that cost a fraction of what we've spent on this, and which don't even require an actual human being to put their life on the line. So, if nothing else, if you're a US defense contractor, you can't be feeling good about your future sales going forward. I would say a lot of our clients who have been looking at how US weapons have been performing in some of these conflicts the last, 10 years or so, they got to be getting kind of nervous if I'm them. That would just be my general assumption. So, yeah, it's just really remarkable, but at a minimum, I think that this puts the weapon supplies that the US has at its disposal an even greater question. Because, I mean, if great an actual conflict really does break out here with a great power like Russia or China, I mean, do we even have advanced weapons that are capable of standing up to them? I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm sure we've got a few tricks left up our sleeves, but so too do the Russians and the Chinese. And to some extent, I think that this is a case where potentially having less resources to throw at their military budgets has maybe helped them, especially Russia, in terms of innovation. Whereas in the US, it just seems like all the money in the world really to just endlessly throw at this stuff for years and years. A lot of our defense contractors and the military has become complacent, to put it mildly. Despite pioneering the use of drones really for combat operations on a wide scale in Afghanistan and later Iraq, we really don't seem to have considered how this technology could potentially be used against our forces and specifically advanced weapons and what that would mean for the future of war. So it's another big thing about all of this. It's playing out right now as we are very much seeing just the dynamics of war, how it's waged, changing, and dramatically at that. And this is definitely something to keep in mind. I mean, already you're seeing the drumbeat about how we have to start beefing up our conventional forces and all this other stuff in the event of a great power war against Russia and China. But a lot of conventional weapons have not fared very well in these conflicts. It's not just a question of can we raise, an extra armored division or two. It's a question of whether or not the armored division would actually be able to do anything before it was utterly destroyed by the weapons that tactics that the Russians have been using. There cannot be a lot of very happy generals within the Iron Ring around the Pentagon right now. Let's just leave it at that. All right, folks, on that note, I'm going to sign off for now. As always, I want to thank you guys so much for listening and your support. With that, good night. Good luck to you all.
Baby, pick me up, out here in my wiki up. Sick and tired of fucking up, sick and tired of pushing luck. Voodoo blue got juice in it, swallow what I'm about to spit. Dunk got 86 from the copper queen for singing this. I took it to the goat, Jay. Boo-ray, my people there, they feeling me. Down low, skin roll, more characters than Stephen King. Said I'm just working at the quarry, y'all. I ain't in a hurry, y'all. Come on, baby, pick me up. Out here in my wiki up. Stuck down in this stick. Hut is hot as hell, I tell you what. Put it up and knock it down. Moving on that big around. Come on, mama, jump down. Turn around, do it for me. Stick it out. Say 1, 2, 3, Geronimo. Jump, baby, we gotta go. Hands tied, blindfold. Jump into that battle zone. I said it's time to get the fuck out. Cause they done let the wolves out. They're coming with that heat, mama shooting up the street. Mama, fight or flight, adrenaline. You feel that little tingle in your feet. Mama, no retreat, mobilize your whole fleet. Hit the street, tell me that you good for it. You want peace, go to war for it. Say 1, 2, 3, Geronimo. Jump, baby, we gotta go. Scream it with me, scream Geronimo. Hands tied, blindfold, jump into that battle zone. Come on, baby, pick me up, out here in my wiki up. Got y'all on some Aztec bullshit, never getting used to it. Got bales of weed and catapults with Santa Muerte diffused in it. Shoot it over the castle wall, the Mikra can't patrol it. Off from Berlin to the Great Wall, the greatest walls are bound to fall. So legalize it, Vato, about a Genghis Chapo. Come on, legalize it, no need to advertise it. The weed cures the cancer, everybody, even Carter realized it. A farmer don't make cash money when we rock that stash, honey. Best believe the gonna take it out your ass someday. Come on, the man ain't getting wealthy with people getting healthy, right? Talking about high AZ, talking about that BMC. We got no economy if we ain't got no enemy. The Popo and the BP, DHS and Army, Honeywell and L3, razor wires, UAVs. Officer, excuse me, please. Said I'm just eating my burrito, not the droids you're looking for. See you all on payday, see you at the Safeway. Bisbee lives on crazy checks, BP on that fast pay. I sing my hoodie blues, y'all. I don't make the rules, y'all. Just paying my dues, y'all. But I'm just saying, sorry hippies. If Great White Father don't make payroll, forget about your maypole. It's just the one thing that ain't too clear. I said people always bitching about the government here, but that war administration's our whole civilization. What?